Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's first quarter 2018 earnings conference call. With us today, we have from Alpek, Jose Valdez, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, IRO, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I will now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning and welcome. We very much appreciate everyone's participation today. This call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdez, our CEO, and Mr. Escalante, our CFO, will provide a general overview of Alpek's first quarter 2018 performance and an update on relevant events. Afterwards, we will have a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Pepe Valdez.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. This was yet another eventful quarter for Alpek, marked by solid operating results and progress in key initiatives. Both our business segments reflect a better-than-expected start this year in several fundamental variables. For instance, Brent oil price was $10 per barrel above our guidance, reaching its highest quarterly average price since 2014. Typically, a rising oil and feedstock price environment has a positive effect on Alpek's EBITDA. The polyester segment was also favored by the ongoing recovery in global polyester margin. During the first quarter, the reference PTA and PET margins in Asia posted their highest level since 2011. In addition, this was the first full quarter of normalized operation at M&G Mexico's PET plant since it shut down last year. We continued providing support to secure financing while a definitive restructuring plan is implemented. The plastic and chemicals segment benefits from a temporary spike in polypropylene prices due to tight supply resulting from propylene plant startup delays and outages in the U.S. Next, I will focus on an important milestone in the M&G USA restructuring process. As outlined since its initial stage, it was important for Alpek to continue participating in the Corpus Christi project. Hence, we are glad to be part of the JV that presenting the winning bid. The closing of the acquisition is subject to approval by governmental authorities, and it is our understanding that this involves a multi-month process. Corpus Christi Polymers, LLC, or CC Polymers, is the name of the entity that was formed to acquire, complete, and operate the Corpus Christi project. The new company is owned in equal shares by Alpek, Indorama, and Far Eastern, all of which hold strong credentials in the global polyester industry. During the first quarter, CC Polymers received the court's approval to acquire all the assets in place at the Corpus Christi site in their current state. The winning bid implies a total value of $1.169 billion. Each partner will contribute up to $390 million, subject to final adjustments. Alpek's portion will be reduced by $200 million, which will be a non-cash contribution, representing partial recovery of the intangible assets that we wrote off from our balance sheet last year. The recovery will be duly recognized in accordance with IFRS upon closing of the transaction. The winning bid does not include the necessary funding for the plant completion. Total cost to complete, the site, and the timeline are to be determined. This cost will be shared accordingly by three partners. Upon completion, the Corpus Christi project will have a nominal capacity of 1.1 million tons per year of PET and 1.3 million tons per year of PTA, making it the largest single line, vertically integrated PET production facility in the world, and the largest PET plant in the Americas. Each partner will have the right to receive one-third of the capacity, or approximately 366,000 tons of PET and 366 tons of PET integrated, and in addition, 122,000 tons of excess PTA. CC Polymers will operate as a toll manufacturer, providing conversion services for Alpek, Indorama, and Far Eastern. Each partner will independently procure its raw materials and will also independently sell and distribute the corresponding PTA and PET. The progress of all the key initiatives is as follows. In Brazil, we obtained the required regulatory approval from the CADE court to acquire Petroquímica Suape and Citepe. Since then, we have worked closely with Petrobras to ensure that all agreed upon conditions are met prior to closing, which is expected to occur before the end of the second quarter, and it could perhaps be, closing could be at the end of this month, April. The process to finalize the sale of our two cogeneration power plants in Mexico is moving forward. However, issues in the implementation of regulatory changes in Mexican power tariffs have weighed on timing. The regulator's implementation process has taken longer than expected, and the recent price movement of certain power tariffs relative to others have caused confusion among market participants. Our view is that this issue should be resolved soon, within the next 2 or 3 months. In the meantime, we are advancing as much as possible on internal matters and undertaking all efforts to conclude the process and reach a final agreement. My final update relates to the PET anti-dumping cases in the United States and Canada. The U.S. Department of Commerce is conducting its investigation on PET imports from Brazil, Indonesia, Korea, Pakistan, and Taiwan. Preliminary determinations and provisional duties, if applicable, are expected during the second quarter. Moreover, the Canadian International Trade Tribunal, or CITT, ruled that PET imports from China, India, Oman, and Pakistan have not caused injury and are not threatening to cause injury to the sole Canadian producer. We were surprised by this, given that the Canadian Border Service Agency has found that imports from Oman, Pakistan have been dumped, and that imports from China and India have been dumped and subsidized. The CITT ruling was appealed a few days ago. At this point, I would like to turn the call over to Eduardo.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. The first quarter was marked by growth in volume, sales, and EBITDA.
Hello, this is Hernan. Sorry
yes.
about the interruption, operator. Are we back on?
You are back on, sir. Please go ahead.
Thank you.
Again, let me restart just to be able that you hear all only respective comments. I was mentioning that the first quarter was marked by growth, volume, sales, and EBITDA. Alpek's first quarter consolidated revenue was up 19% year-on-year, and 16% quarter-on-quarter, driven by higher prices and volume in both business segments. Volume was up 3%, and average consolidated prices increased 15% year-on-year, reflecting the rise in oil and feedstock prices. First quarter consolidated EBITDA was $181 million, including a $16 million non-cash inventory gain and $5 million in non-recurring legal expenses. Adjusting for these two items, comparable consolidated EBITDA was $170 million, up 30% versus a year ago, and 37% higher than the previous quarter, driven mainly by the performance of the polyester segment. A favorable oil price environment, the ongoing recovery in global polyester margins, and normalized operations at MNG Mexico contributed to first quarter comparable polyester EBITDA growth of 48% year-on-year and 54% quarter-on-quarter. Quarterly comparable polyester EBITDA was higher than $100 million for the first time in more than 2 years. Comparable plastics and chemicals EBITDA was up 9% and 17% versus 1Q17 and 4Q17 respectively, driven mainly by higher than expected polypropylene margins. Moving down on the P&L, Alpek's first quarter profit attributable to the controlling interest was $82 million, compared to $87 million a year ago, as the improvement in operating income was more than offset by a lower non-cash foreign exchange gain, among others. Regarding our balance sheet and certain cash flow items, net debt was $1.3 billion, up 1%, or $7 million versus year-end 2017. Our net leverage ratio and interest coverage were 3.1 times and 4.8 times respectively, mainly due to the M&D provision that affected trailing 12-month EBITDA. Adjusting for this $130 million non-recurring charge, net debt to EBITDA was 2.4 times, and interest coverage was 6.1 times. The largest cash flow items in the first quarter were net working capital, and CapEx. The increase in sales and a rising feedstock price environment has required additional investment in net working capital, mainly in the polyester segment. Although relative to sales, net working capital days are lower quarter on quarter. CapEx of $54 million reflects the ongoing development of strategic projects. The majority of these funds were invested in the initial contribution to CC Polymers for the acquisition of the Corpus Christi project and the Altamira Power for Generation project. In terms of liquidity, our cash balance was $440 million at the end of the first quarter. In addition, we signed a 3-year dollar-denominated credit of up to $710 million with the Bank of Tokyo, Citigroup, HSBC, and JP Morgan, which provides additional financial flexibility to refinance existing short-term debt and temporarily finance the Brazil and Corpus Christi acquisitions. This loan has an 18-month availability period and can be prepaid at any time, in whole or in part. Net proceeds from the potential sale of the two power cogeneration plants would be used to pay down the loan's balance. Up to date, this credit is unused. On a final note, Several relevant variables had a better than expected start this year that translated into higher EBITDA. This will be taken into consideration as we plan on updating our guidance next quarter to include pending transactions such as the Brazil acquisition and the potential sale of the two power cogeneration plants. Until then, we maintain our 2018 guidance unchanged. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to play their questions.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. And if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And we will take our first question today from Nikolai Lippmann. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question here. And clearly, congratulations on the strong results. I have two questions. First, on the commercial structure of the North American pricing for polyester. Historically, we had a cost-plus model that helped visibility. It reduced volatility. It looks like over the past couple of years, that model has been a little weaker with imports. We've seen a lot of volatility in results. Today it's going in the right direction. But could you perhaps reflect a bit on where we are today and if we could move closer towards a cost-plus model where you have better visibility, lower volatility results? So that's the first one. Number two is in Brazil, and I hope it's not too early to talk about Brazil. But if you could give us a sense of how we should think about pricing in Brazil, would that be similar to sort of Asian global pricing, or would there be factors that would limit pricing in Brazil or be different from global? And also, do we have a sense of the initial sort of Q3, 4 capacity utilization of the Brazil plant? Thank you very much.
Good morning, Nikolai. With respect to your first question, yes, we do have seen some price volatility in prices in North American PET. But to a great extent, prices have remained cost-plus. The only problem is that due to the pressure from imports over the last months, the plus changed. Okay, so what happened was that the margin over the cost came down as a result, as I mentioned, of mostly I would say imports, and to a certain extent the expected start up of the Corpus Christi plant. But I think the biggest impact was coming from imports, and I mentioned already that the margins of the integrated margins of PET in Asia have moved up considerably, particularly over the last, I would say, 4 or 5 months. Just to give you a reference, traditionally we use as a reference for margins in Asia of integrated PET around the 225, let's say somewhere between $200 and $250 per ton. That's a typical number that we have seen over the last six years, from pretty much from, let's say, from 12 onwards. And that has remained in that range. Let's talk about 250 to make it easier. A little bit less, a little bit more, but 250 was pretty much probably the average. Now, the situation we are seeing, particularly, I would say it started at the fourth quarter last year. We've seen prices moving, or margins moving more towards the 300 number as opposed to the 250. The margins have been moving closer to 300, And today, you know, today meaning March, April, those prices have been going up to the, you know, $370, $380 per ton. And I'm talking Asian prices, not necessarily China prices. But even in China, which is normally Asian prices are a bit higher than in China. But recently, even last week, we've seen prices, even in China, which typically is lower than Asia, we've seen margins of, you know, going over $400 per ton. So it's very difficult for us to forecast the, what's going to happen with those margins. But I would say that we will be comfortable to say that, if anything, the margins of integrated PET in Asia are going to be more in the 300 range than in the 250 range that we have seen for several years. What is the reason for this? Well, there are several reasons. I think one of the reasons is pretty much the fact that demand has been improving. As you know, there have not been significantly new plants built. So one way or another, the capacity utilization is also getting better. I assume you're also familiar with the fact that in China they were buying a lot of PET bottles from the U.S. recycled, and then there was a regulation which banned imports of recycled material, so that has created additional again demand for the virgin raw materials. So again, that is helping improve capacity utilization. So when you put all of these factors together, we believe that, again, we're seeing a change in margins in Asia from the 250 to the 300. We'll see where it stabilizes. We don't believe the 400 are going to be there for quite too long. We believe this is a very short-term situation. But regardless, even if margins go from 250 to 300, that is a very significant improvement. And eventually, Nicole, not in an automatic way, eventually this would probably also support perhaps returning the cost laws or the plus in the following months. In North America, at least for us, most of the contracts of PET for this year are already, as I mentioned, cost plus, and they have been already determined. But if the margins in Asia remain at these levels of 300 or higher, there might be an opportunity of improving contracts for next year. In the meantime, of course, we can see improvements in our margins, in our PET exports out of Mexico or North America. We can see perhaps improvements in our Argentinian plant, which is very much related almost automatically to the margins in Asia. We might see some improvement in our Canadian plant as well for the same reasons. And also we might see improvements. There is a small portion of our PET sales in North America that have some reference to the Asian prices. So we do expect if these margins continue in these levels to see some improvement, and hopefully, again, the major improvement could come next year if again this global or this Asian situation remains at the new level. Let me just remind all of you that the margins that we have seen over the last 6 years, and we have repeatedly said that, at the 225, 250, basically covering cash costs for the Asian producers. So most of the producers have not been making money. In fact, most of them have been losing money. So again, there is a chance that margins will stay more around the 300 than the 250. So yeah, we could expect an improvement in the margins going forward. But as I said, it's not going to be automatic. And most of the impact will be seen in next year's results, particularly if the margins in Asia remain. remain in the 300 or higher.
But your pricing operating rates keep creating.
Okay, with respect to your second question, can you ask about Brazil pricing? Brazil pricing follows the same logic than in Argentina. In Brazil, it's also much more aligned in almost automatic way to price destination. So, yes, if price destination remain in this level, that would be also that would also benefit us in our Brazilian project, both for PTA and PET. This would be reasonably good news. Okay? And operating rate, I didn't realize you were asking globally or
No, I was thinking about Brazil.
Okay, well, look, again, operating rates in Brazil, there is quite a lot of excess capacity, as you know. The market, probably the market is around, for PET, it's around 500,000 tons. Perhaps, you know, now with this situation of import prices becoming higher, indirectly this market might grow, because a lot of this market is also import preforms from other Latin American countries that buy PET from Asia. So let's say the market could be, under these new circumstances, around 600,000 tons. And the capacity there, I would say, is close to 1 million tons. So there is excess capacity in Brazil for PET. And PTA, it should be capacity utilization very high, simply because, you know, the Mercosur market is 600,000 tons of PET. That would be like 500,000 tons PTA. The capacity of the plant is 650. So, you know, I would say that PTA capacity utilization looks good in Brazil, and PET is still, there is still a significant gap. It's still a significant oversupply. We still believe that in coming years, Brazil has a lot of potential to grow. It's not only we. I mean, the consultants, the experts, the analysts in the industry think so. And eventually, we do see a possibility of Brazil's consumption going 900,000 tons, at which time, you know, the capacity utilization will be much more balanced. But for the next 6 months, we still believe there's going to be plenty of overcapacity in PET and a much more balanced supply-demand in terms of the PTA.
Very helpful. Thank you very much. And again, congratulations on the very strong numbers.
Thank you.
And our next question will come from Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hello, Alpec team. Thanks for the call and also congrats on the results. My question is about the, first of all, quick one about the anti-dumping case in the U.S. Do you remain positive that there will be a positive resolution on this case for the U.S., or do you think that the Canadian result changes your view there? And then probably related to that, when Corpus Christi starts operating, do you think there will be need for rationalizing capacity of PET in the U.S. or North America, how much does that depend on the resolution for the anti-dumping case? Thank you.
Well, I do believe that the anti-dumping case in the U.S. looks good. As I explained, the situation in Canada, that was for some reason, they determined that there was no injury to the Canadian supplier, which, you know, is something we want to better understand. But in the case of the U.S., the determination of injury has pretty much been done, and now we are in a stage where they are determining the preliminary duties. So we do believe that we have a very strong case and very good possibilities in the anti-dumping case in the U.S. And we believe we should be having at least this preliminary definition in the next couple of months. Assuming this is the case, you know, imports into the U.S. in the last years are around 700,000 tons. So if we do have this, if we succeed in this anti-dumping, then a significant part of the Corpus Christi capacity would replace those imports. So yes, of course, once Corpus Christi starts, there's going to be a lower capacity utilization, but hopefully, if we are successful in replacing the imports, and also with 2-3% growth in the market on a yearly basis, if the market in North America is for 4 million tons or around that, 2-3% is 100,000 tons per year. So again, I think there shouldn't be a need to rationalize capacity. In fact, I would say, hopefully, we will have an opportunity of increasing capacity not too long after the Corpus Christi start off. So we're more again, depends a lot on the anti-dumping, but we're more looking into new possibilities to grow than into shutting down capacity at this stage.
Okay, Pepe. Can I add a question about the process for the sale of the cogeneration plants? Do you see risks? Do you see any risk that the bottlenecks or the difficulties in implementing the pricing system? Do you see a risk that will take longer, even longer than 2-3 months, or that? It's not resolved on a timely manner for your interest.
Yeah, well, we certainly are prepared for that. In case that situation develops, we are prepared to face that. We have seen. If I tell you the story, there was, as I mentioned, a change in tariffs that was starting in December last year. And what we understood of it is that at the end of this transition, the power rates in Mexico will be probably increasing somewhere between 10-15%. But the government made a determination that in order to soften this increase and not to create a sudden increase in tariffs, they wanted to sort of transition during 5 months. And they wanted to increase or calculate the new tariff, 80% of the old tariff in the first month, 20% of the new one, and so on and forth. Second month, 60-40, and then 40-60, so that eventually it will be gradually converging into the new tariff at the end of the 5 months. So something happened that we don't understand, so I cannot really explain to you what happened, that as opposed to going up, the rates came down, and the rates came down significantly in the first couple of months, particularly December, January, and February. And as I say, don't ask me, we don't understand, and I don't think anybody understands. I don't even think the government understands what happened, but so that happened, and now we have seen the gradual change starting a little bit in February, March. And we do understand also there's going to be another change in April. So eventually, perhaps, I think by June, I think perhaps the new tariff will be stabilized around that time, June, July, August, I don't know. And of course, that's going to determine also the speed of forward process. I would say, if I am optimistic, perhaps in June, the new tariffs or the tariffs will reach their intended level, and if not, perhaps around August. So that would be the time frame, and that has impacted us in a way that we are about to sign or to close a lot of contracts that we have, and some of the customers are really just waiting to make sure that the power rates, the tariffs, are where they are supposed to be. And that's why this has created a delay for us. And again, a time frame I see for tariffs to normalize would be somewhere between June and August.
Okay, Pepe, that's extremely helpful. And right now, when do you expect Altamira to come to operation?
Our day is fourth quarter.
Okay.
We still believe we'll start operations in the fourth quarter this year. So
okay.
we're pretty much on time, on schedule.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next question will come from Eduardo Altamirano with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. I appreciate you taking my question. I actually have two. The one is if you can walk us through any sort of update on the process that is going on with M&G and Altamira right now, if there are any next steps in terms of what kind of milestones or any sort of, let's just call it, breaking points that we might come to expect that could be potential catalysts for you. And the second one is with regards to the sale of the Cogen assets, I know that you've stated that you are intent on doing so. However, I understand that you would be using those proceeds to buy what could be considered distressed assets. However, wouldn't it be from a strategic standpoint, and this is just, you know, one person's view, which is mine, be that those assets provide a certain level of cash flow stability that you don't have in a very volatile and cyclical industry. Wouldn't it be better to keep those, lever up the company for this interim process of acquiring M&G's assets and swap in CDEP and then maybe deleveraging within the next couple of years?
Let me turn your first question to Eduardo. He's very familiar with the Altamira M&G restructuring. And then then I will get back and talk about the sale of cogeneration.
Hi, Eduardo. Thank you for your question. Yes, regarding the M&G Altamira plant, it has been operating at very high rates. We think we will be able to maintain that in order to make sure that the supply to the market remains stable. The process itself, we are providing financial support via deep financing secured by a second lien. All in all, our commitment is $60 million. As of the first quarter of this year, we have provided $30 million, and the remaining towards the 60 will be provided when a restructuring plan is agreed and in place by all the creditors of M&G Mexico. We think that is going still to take some time, but again, in the meantime, we are making sure that the company continues at very high operating rates and maintaining PET supply to the market.
Okay, so again, the Altamira, restart looks good, looks solid, and we will continue to support because for two reasons, of course. Number one, it's an outlet for our PPA, but also I think an important consideration is we don't want to open the door for additional imports into the North American market. So we want PET to be produced here. And so that way we help supply the demand for our customers. And then with respect to the sale of cogeneration, for us, the strategic reason to develop the cogeneration projects was to assure a competitive power rate to our facilities in Mexico. And also to assure reliability. In our plants, every shutdown we have costs us a lot of money. So the reason for building those plants is both, not only to reduce our power rates, but also to improve the quality and reliability of our electrical or power supply. So that was the, let's say, mandatory objective. Now, the only issue we have now is that we have realized that these assets, the cogeneration assets, are quite different than our petrochemical assets in terms of the cyclicality or volatility of the cash flows. And it has always been our understanding that these assets could command a higher multiple in the market if they were separated from our existing operations. So that's the other part of the rationale behind. We consider that these assets could help Alpek significantly, not only to the leverage, but also to generate more value for the shareholders. Because if these let me explain, you know, if Alpek is trading at 7 times, 8 times EBITDA, and we can sell this cogeneration assets at 8 or 9 times, you know, that would increase value to shareholders. So that's the rationale why we are undertaking this transaction. But what you said is also true. You know, the fact is that, of course, we want to deleverage, but yeah, in the worst of cases, yeah, it's very likely that if we couldn't sell the assets, that the company Alpek could very quickly deleverage anyway. So that's the situation. But we have decided that that the best thing for us to do is to deleverage and then again use that money to continue to acquire other assets in more closer to our fields of expertise.
All right, makes sense. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it. Oh, sorry, did you have something else? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I just wanted to make sure if that answered your question, Eduardo.
It does. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
And we'll now go to Luis Carvalho with UBS.
Hey, Pepe, Eduardo, Hernan. Thanks for the time, and apologies if I'm coming back to some of the topics already discussed. But I'd like to approach them maybe from a different angle. First, we saw some, I would say, some delays in the congen sales in Mexico, and I understand that many of these has some correlation with the tariff revision happening in the country right now. I just would like to understand what is the status of the negotiation now? Is it waiting mode or still negotiating some of the conditions, and how can I say a potential failure on the negotiation could impact your leverage and dividend payment plans over the next year or so. And second question is regarding the MNG plants in Mexico. You already mentioned that. I mean, plants are operating at a very high level, and we saw that as a consequence in the results. But now MNG is working the restructuring plan, which should be presented by the first half of this year, right? And I understand that any potential acquisition from Alpek or other companies would only come after that. But I would like to understand your approach in terms of capital allocation versus leverage. What are the plans to approach the asset in the back of the opportunity of the, let's say, potential cash generation in the country and higher exposure versus the leverage that you might see? Thank you.
Look, in terms of the negotiations for the cogen sale, I think the most critical issue for us right now is signing the power purchase agreement with certain customers. We have a threshold we agreed in negotiation that we have to reach before we sell, and we are a bit delayed in signing those agreements. As a result of this, let's say, volatility or uncertainty in the tariffs. I think as long, I mean, as the tariffs become normal or normalized, we will be able to continue to sell or to sign those PPAs. And once we reach a certain level of PPA, the transaction can proceed almost automatically. So I would say that's the key factor delaying the cogeneration.
Okay, and just to follow up on this, likewise, the tariffs in Mexico are likely to be higher. So, of course, I understand that this is likely to be translated in the end valuation, right?
Yes. Okay, now, with respect to the Altamira restructuring plan, right now, there is a lot of discussion or negotiation between the creditors and the company to determine the best route. Basically, I would tell you there are two routes. One is, of course, is to get indicative offers, people interested in buying the asset, number one. Number two is doing a restructuring plan, which means understanding how much debt the company can carry, and then perhaps giving longer term to the remaining debt or lower interest rates, or even consider equitization of the other part. And I think, honestly, what's going to happen is a combination of both. I think the company has been now asking for indicative offers to sell the company, and I think depending on that, the decision will be taken. My guess is that with the uncertainty that we are facing today, as part of, for example, NAFTA, whether NAFTA is signed or not signed, NAFTA could have a significant impact on the valuation of Altamira. So I think with this uncertainty, probably, what's going to happen is that the existing creditors are going to run the company for some time, and then eventually, of course, looking for an M&A opportunity. Okay. From our side, and again with all this uncertainty as well, cogeneration, no cogeneration, corpus, no corpus. How much is going to be required to finish corpus? We are pretty much standing on the sideline with respect to acquisition of Altamira.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next is Sarah Leshner with Barclays.
Hi, thanks very much. I just wanted to see if we could get a little bit more clarity about the guidance for 2018, because I think I was surprised that you weren't raising that in light of more growth than we had previously expected coming from the MNG operations in Mexico and Corpus Christi and the assets in Brazil. And anyway, if I could just understand whether I'm missing something that you think will offset that growth, or whether you are being more conservative until you have further clarity on some of those developments. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for the question. When we build the guidance for this year, because of the uncertainty regarding the Brazilian acquisition and the sale of the cogeneration assets, in particular the timing of them, we decided not to include those in the guidance. So the guidance is basically a pro forma of the operations that we currently have. Now, after this first quarter, which was significantly higher than what we consider in the guidance had $139 million EBITDA for the first quarter versus the $181 that we were able to achieve. We are planning after the second quarter to review the guidance to incorporate what we had at that date, most probably the Brazilian acquisition, and hopefully we will be more advanced in the negotiations of the cogen assets. But at this time, we decided not to review the guidance until we have it incorporated a few more months, as well as the Brazilian acquisition.
Is there anything else, Sarah?
No, thanks very much. I was on mute as I was telling you. That makes sense, and my other questions have been answered, so that's it for me. Thanks and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we will now go to Christian Landy with Scotiabank.
Hi, good morning, everyone. So my question is kind of related to the previous one. Would it be fair to say that the additional EBITDA from the positive environment of which you have been talking about in the polyester segment could overshadow the negative impact that you might have when you ramp up Suape and when you take over Suape and Sitepe, which, as far as I understand, will generate negative EBITDA in the first months, and also the savings that are going to be lost once you transfer the COSO and Altamira plants or cogeneration plants to the buyer? That would be my question. Thank you.
Well, we are, I would say, a bit more optimistic about the PQS and Sitepe acquisition. We no longer believe that it will be a negative FDA. We are hopeful that from the very beginning we're going to generate some positive FDA based on the changes that I've talked to you in the marketplace and based also in the changes taking place in Brazil since the situation with MNG. In fact, PQS has been generating positive EBITDA for the first quarter already. And I would say PQS and Sitepe, they have been generating positive EBITDA for the fourth quarter last year and the first quarter this year. So we believe we have a less conservative outlook of the PQS consolidation. We do believe it will be accretive probably from day one. So that's perhaps one of your questions.
Yeah, let me also add, Christian, that the guidance for 2018 does include a $20 to $25 million EBITDA from the current COSO cogeneration plant. So when the same transaction is concluded, we will need to subtract from the guidance the remaining months of that asset. But that is all that was included from Cogen in our guidance.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we'll go to Gilberto Garcia with Barclays.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. Given all the, and we have talked about how there are a lot of moving pieces and uncertain timing across the board, can you talk about what sort of, what's the higher end of a leverage that you would be comfortable with? At what point do you say, you know, we like the MNG Altamira assets and maybe we will go above our traditional levels, but we would think this is worth it?
Okay, well, look, we have targeted and we have explained to you, I would say around ratio of 2 net debt to EBITDA. That is, let's say, over the situation where we feel comfortable on an equilibrium basis. I agree with you, and depending on the transaction, we might go higher for a short period of time. So do not worry, we will not let a strategic project go away if it only means going beyond the 2 for a short period of time. So I do believe we will have a flexibility to go beyond that, but again, with the idea that this is going to be only for 1 year, 2 years at the most, so we will have some flexibility for that.
Okay, on to
so
thank you.
And Altamira, as you can imagine, is very strategic for us.
Right, and on Altamira, I'm sorry, you were saying.
Altamira is very strategic for us, so it's a very important project. And for us, particularly, the PTA contract is critical. So we, for us, that's mandatory. So we're going to be very, let's say, rational from a valuation point of view. I mean, if there's somebody else that offers a higher price than we believe is worth, that's okay. And I think in such a case, we would just try to keep the PTA contract, supply PTA in that plant, because it makes a lot of sense. And that would be it.
Okay. And you know, on Altamira, since I don't know if it's fair to say that now you have more visibility into the results of that plant, are those assets performing well? Because obviously there's not a lot of clarity on the type of distress that MNG has, but our sense is that those assets in particular were at least profitable, right?
Yes, the company has traditionally been profitable. It's a good plant. It's a competitive plant. And again, it does have the advantage of being on the same side as a PTA plant. So that you know, that's a virtual integration, which I think is very important in these new in these new times of PET, you know, where you have more intense competition. But again, for the same reason, I do believe that we want to be very close to this and make sure that in the worst of cases, we maintain the PTA supply.
Great. Thank you very much.
And as a final reminder, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 at this time for any questions. And we will pause for just a moment. And with no questions in the queue, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Lozano for any additional or closing remarks.
Yes, I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. And please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a nice day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining us.